So our final speaker for this session is John Cloak. He's an assistant scientist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and he'll be telling us about big data algorithms for rank-based estimation.
Thanks for the introduction. My name is John Cloak, and I'm going to talk about rank-based estimation in a big data setting. So it's going to be more on the results of the algorithms than on the algorithms themselves. If you're interested in the details, we can talk offline, or I can send you a copy of the manuscript. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time reviewing rank-based estimation. If this was a non-parametrics talk, I wouldn't worry about it, but this is an R talk, and so maybe not everyone is familiar with what rank-based estimation is. Then I'll talk about the algorithms, have a couple simulations to show you, and then an example. So I have some slides on the details, but I'm going to refer you to references on rank-based estimation in the for time, given this is a pretty short talk. But rank-based estimation is for estimation of parameters in a linear model. We've extended it to linear mixed models and time series and so forth. So you want estimates, and you want to be able to do inference on those parameter estimates. So you need to choose a score function. You could think of this in the same way as in M estimation, you're choosing a psi function, or as in GLM, you're choosing a link function. For example, if you have binary data, you might choose between a logistic link or a probit link. We know that the logistic is much better, but in continuous data, you might not know. So often what we do is you use a Wilcoxon score or a linear score, which is highly efficient relative to least squares at the normal. It's 95% efficient at the normal, but it can be much more efficient if the tails are heavy. And it's robust to outliers in response space. So once you've chosen the score function, we can define a convex optimization problem. So we can solve that using sort of standard optimizers so I'll get to that in a minute. And then the inference is defined. So if you want a reference, here's a good one. There's others, but I recommend this one. So here's the setup, right? We have a usual IID linear model. We have weaker assumptions than least squares in that we're assuming that the errors are IID and have finite Fisher information, but we don't need to make an assumption about the form of the error distribution. So in least squares, you typically assume that the errors are normal, right? Or you make some assumption, you at least assume that the variance exists. Here, you don't need to assume the variance exists. So it's a weaker assumption. The assumptions on the design matrix are the same as in least squares, and those are given there. So here's the convex optimization problem. This is where the rank comes from. So you're minimizing a function of the ranks. Actually, it's a score of the ranks, and you can choose different score functions, as long as the score function is non-decreasing. So here are plots of example score functions. In the top left is the Wilcoxon scores, or linear scores, which is what we typically use when we don't have knowledge of the underlying error distribution. In the bottom right are the bent scores, and you might use these scores if you have heavy tail distributions so that residuals on the ends of the distribution get sort of the same weight, so you're essentially downweighting them relative to the Wilcoxon scores. If you have right skewed errors, you might use the top right. If you have light-tailed errors, if you think you have light-tailed errors, you might use the scores in the bottom left. So once you choose the score function, you have an optimization problem. You can solve that. It's convex, so it behaves pretty nicely. You can show that the estimates are consistent and asymptotically normal. From there, you can get simple tests and hypothesis of the parameters, confidence intervals of the parameters. There's also a reduction and dispersion test, which is similar to the reduced model test in standard linear models. And then there's an R package that implements all of this that we wrote up and published in the R journal in 2012, which I think has a tidy API in that it uses standard linear model syntax and has helper functions, namely summary and RFIT, or RStudent. Again, so this uses Optum to minimize the objective function. There's a bunch of score functions available, including the ones on the graphic a few slides ago. Updates are posted, so it's available on CRAN, and updates are posted to my GitHub page. So switching to big data, basically what we do is we partition the real number line into B disjoint segments or bins, and then we use step scores. So instead of using Wilcoxon stores, we're going to use step scores so that residuals in the same bin get the same score. Okay, so instead of having to sort the whole data set, essentially rank the whole data set, essentially sorting the whole data set, we only have to do a partial sort. So here's an example. Here's a plot of a step score functions for the Wilcoxon with 20 bins. Okay, so everything in the first bin gets the same. So the first fifth of the data get the same score, essentially, and so on and so forth. So I'm working on a package. I was hoping to have it done by now, but it's not. There's code available on GitHub. I'm calling it BigRFit. I'm not really happy with that name. I think I'm going to change that, but it's the working name for now. Again, code's available on GitHub. It's not a package yet. I hope to finish that up in a few days. Uses machinery from RFit, namely summary and RStudent, etc. It imports from RCP and data table. And it's currently in development, obviously. So I have a couple simulations. So when I first started thinking about this problem, I was like, how do you choose B? Okay, so I thought, well, I probably want a lot of small bins for accuracy, right? So I can, again, this is approximating, think about it as approximating the linear scores, the Wilcoxon scores. So I want probably a lot of small bins. And so as I ran simulations, it seemed I kept pushing B back and back. So I started with like 10,000. Or 1,000. Actually, I started with it as a function of the sample size, the number of records, but then I kept pushing it back. So in this simulation, I'm looking at 10 bins, 15 bins, 20 bins, etc., up to 100 bins. And I'm looking at 10,000 observations with 20 covariates, 50 covariates, and 100 covariates. And I'm looking at the metrics of MSE, confidence, empirical confidence interval coverage of a 95% confidence interval, and then mean computation time. And so I'm comparing the step scores algorithm with the Wilcoxon. That's the main comparison. And I also threw in L1 scores just for sort of fun, I guess. So here are the results with 20 covariates. And we have step scores with 10 bins, step scores with 15 bins, et cetera, up to Wilcoxon, and then the L1. So you can see MSE sort of increases, accuracy increases as you increase the number of bins. The confidence interval coverage is getting closer to 95%, and the Wilcoxon is right on. I mean, we've spent some time making sure that inference is correct for the Wilcoxon. But the time, the step scores relative to the Wilcoxon is much faster, order of magnitude, in this case. And the L1 is here. It's performing as expected. So then when I switch to 50 covariates, it's a similar comparison between the Wilcoxon and the step scores. There's not quite the advantage of the step scores in terms of computation time, but in terms of accuracy, statistical accuracy, it's the same. And then the L1 is sort of maybe losing a little bit in terms of statistical accuracy. So when I go to 100 covariates, again, it's a similar situation between the step scores and the Wilcoxon scores. But the L1 seems to lose a lot of statistical accuracy, and this was sort of an artifact. I mean, this is sort of an aside to this talk. I wasn't planning on. I sort of just threw in the L1 for fun. Remember? So we're seeing a speed up and not much loss in terms of statistical accuracy. So I sort of at this point empirically settled on 100 as the number of bins to use. And then we developed a theoretical result that shows that the step scores converge to that. The efficiency of the step scores relative to least squares converge to that of the Wilcoxon. And then with 100 bins, you're 99.97% accurate or efficient to the Wilcoxon. And if you get up to 600, you're 100% accurate to two decimal places. So I sort of settled on 100. If you're really concerned about accuracy, you can use 500 or 1,000 bins. So the second simulation, I was just interested in time relative to least squares. I wanted to see if we were sort of in the ballpark in terms of computation time. So here I'm just looking at comparison of step scores with least squares, and again, I'm throwing L1 in for fun. So here, again, I settled on 100 bins. I'm looking at 100,000 observations and 10,000 observations. So these aren't huge data sets, but it gives me a sense of how fast things are going, are computing. And then I'm looking at 10, 100, and 1,000 covariates. And again, it's computation time is the metric. So the top table is 10,000 observations, and the comparison between step scores and least squares is, so for the step scores, for the rank-based estimation, we need to, we do a QR decomposition of the design matrix, so we're effectively doing a least square. So we're going to be slower than least squares by default, but I was just curious how much slower. And so it's, you know, so for 10, it's a fraction of a second for least squares and 2.5 seconds for step scores. And then for 1,000 observations, it's a minute and a half versus 3 minutes. So I'd say that we're sort of in the ballpark. But this artifact of L1 sort of taking a long time for 1,000, for when you get a lot of covariates, I was sort of surprised by that. And the same thing is sort of true for when there's 100,000 observations. Right, so these simulations were taking a long time, and I'm like, why? And they finished, and I was like, oh, it's L1's fault, not step score. So I was happy. I was sort of happy to see that. So here's an example of that Sheether looked at in a paper that's coming out later this year. I have a preprint. Basically, these are New York City taxi cab fares on January 15, 2013, where the payment type was credit card or cash, and it was a standard city rate, and the distance was less than 3 miles, and the average speed was at least 25 miles per hour. So the idea is that you didn't want to look at observations that where they were just sitting in traffic. So it was about 50,000 observations. Again, these are not huge data sets. So here are comparison box plots of the data. So you can see there's a lot of observations hovered around what seems to be a linear trend. And then there's some outliers, and then there's some dramatic gross outliers. Okay, and so what happens when I fit the two models? I'm fitting least squares and the rank-based methods. The rank-based, the robust includes the L1, the step scores, and the Wilcoxon. You get an estimate of, sorry, I got to step back. So here I think I know the answer. I know what the answer should be. So the standard fare should be 250 base fare, and then 50 cents per quarter, per fifth mile. So I think the answer should be an intercept of $2.50, and a slope of $2.50, which the robust methods get exactly right, and the confidence interval is right to the penny. Whereas the least squares, I would say, underestimates the intercept and overestimates the slope. So I think this is an example which illustrates the importance. Even if you have a lot of data, you have to be careful about the robustness. Make sure you're using a robust method, because you might not get the right answer even though you think you are. So in summary, how to choose B. I think low accuracy for small B, and high computing time for large B. I didn't really show the when I had a lot of bins, like 1,000 or 10,000 bins. But I sort of settled on using B equals 100, again, as the default in the package. A big speed up over RFIT. I didn't show a lot of that results just because RFIT was taking much longer for data sets in like the 100,000 range. And I would like to say that I think it's in the ballpark of least squares for the examples I've considered. So you're trading a little bit of speed for robustness in terms of using the step scores algorithm. The code's available at GitHub currently. Again, a package is in development. I hope to have it done in a few days. Estimates are robust, and I think that example illustrates the importance of that. The L1, this was, again, an artifact of these simulations, appear to lose accuracy and speed in terms of as P increases. So future work, I'm currently just focusing on Wilcoxon scores, but I want to look at the other score functions. High performance computing, I've got a GPU I'm playing around with, and I'd like to see what this does on sort of a Spark implementation. So I thought it would also be nice to incorporate the algorithm in our fit, maybe as an initial fit. So if you have even like 200 observations, you could use maybe 10 bins, as do a couple steps with 10 bins, and then feed that into the Optum as the initial fit. And then other methods I want to extend is to linear mixed models. So I think that's it. Thanks.
Are there any questions for our speaker? After we manage to open our eyes again from the lights. So I guess I'll ask a question, if that's all right, without prejudice to anyone else. So I work with doctors, basically, being in the School of Medicine, and I almost never see data that could possibly be described as parametric. So can you describe some use cases where non-parametric regression would be very important for specific research areas? I mean, I know in medicine, that's what I tell people all the time, even if it's just a non-parametric test, but regressions as well. Can you talk about other use cases that you've experienced in your practice?
Sure. I mean, so rank-based estimation, as you can see from the references, rank-based estimation was sort of discovered or invented in the 70s. And it's really not widespread. I think with the package, the development of the R package, R fit, I think it's being used more. I've used it in some collaborations with doctors, and I can give you references. Sometimes it's just the matter of building a precedence, I think. And I have some references where people are using it in other papers as well. I like to try and use it when there are outliers in the data, or you know, it's clear that the normality assumption is not met.
That answers my question. Thank you. And I apologize. I mispronounced the speaker's last name when I introduced him, so that's my bad. Are there any other questions for our speaker? Oh, ma'am, here in the front.
So this still requires n greater than p, right? And I guess I'm wondering, how does it perform if p is close to n, or just there are a lot of
So the question is, does this automatically require n greater than p, and also how does it perform when n is relatively close to p?
Yeah, that's a great question. So yes, it does require, the short answer is yes, it requires n larger than p. It's a regression problem. We haven't really looked at the case when n is close to p, but in all situations we've looked at, sort of the theoretical result is that it's going to be the same, that the relative efficiency will be the same as least squares. So it'll be 95% efficient as least squares. Yeah, it's independent of the number of columns. That result is independent of the number of columns. Yeah. So actually, I'll just make a comment. I would say 90% of the time I'm called cloak instead of cloaky. So you're with the majority.
Oh wow, okay. So any other questions for our speaker? Okay, one last thing I thought I'd mention. Let's see if I can figure out how to do this on a Mac. Okay. I just wanted to point out that our speaker's book is available on eBay. I checked a few minutes ago, so please feel free to purchase it there and support our user conference. Well, anyway, so I don't want to keep anyone from lunch, but we have all our speakers still here, so if you had a question that you thought of after and you want to ask them, they're all up here in the front. Please feel free to come up. I thank you for your attention and for your attendance at this session.